This meeting's going to come to order. We do have a quorum, so Representative Barr, have you read the minutes? And would you like to approve the minutes dated?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from March 8th.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Motion passes. Okay, our first bill up today is House File 2087. Representative Juergens, would you like to move this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2087.
This will be for potential inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill.
For potential inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Juergens moves House File 2087 for possible inclusion in Ag Finance Bill. Representative Franson, please present your bill.
Why, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I must say I'm super excited to be in front of this committee to continue the amazing work that we have done on industrial hemp. House File 2087 appropriates $200,000 for each year for the administration of Minnesota's industrial hemp program. And I am extremely excited and very pleased to report that Minnesota's industrial hemp program is growing rapidly. In 2016, the inaugural growing season, the department authorized the cultivation of 37 acres of hemp. This year, in 2017, over 2,000 acres of hemp will be cultivated in 23 counties across the state. This is certainly an exciting year for hemp production in Minnesota. Through the program, we are learning about the many facts of hemp production and marketing in Minnesota. Growers provide important data on hemp cultivation, and their experience will complement research efforts already occurring at the U of M. Industrial hemp holds great promise for Minnesota, and I encourage your support for this legislation to direct resources to MDA to administer and further promote hemp production and research in Minnesota. Last year, one-time money was authorized by the legislature for the MDA pilot, and given the considerable increase in applications to the program this season, House Files 2087's appropriation will be put to good use in administrating a growing program, assisting participants, and fostering new emerging agricultural markets. And with me today are two hemp producers, Mr. Strofus and Mr. Helberg, who will share with you their experiences with the industrial hemp production.
Representative Franson, are you ready for your testifier?
Yes.
Is this Mr. Strofus?
This is Mr. Helberg.
Josh Helberg.
Mr. Helberg, I apologize for that. Mr. Helberg, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Josh Helberg, and I'm with Good Ol' Hemp.
Thank you.
So I got some products here that I can answer any questions on. But Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Josh Helberg, owner of Good Ol' Hemp. Good Ol' Hemp is growing hemp for Good Ol' Hemp quality. We are a seed-to-sale company here in Minnesota. We were the first hemp fiber growers approved to grow in Minnesota in 2016. My website is www.goodolhemp.com. My website will feature my hemp products I make and sell. Last year, I grew industrial hemp through the pilot program, and it was initially very difficult for me to get my hemp seed into Minnesota. I was able to plant my hemp seed finally on July 7th. This year I'm planting 16 acres. My mission is to create markets for industrial hemp and deliver from seed to sale. Currently I'm in the research and development stage with many of my products. My focus is on roasting hemp seed. I have found a food grade facility called Sprout in Little Falls that is going to let me process my hemp seed. I will have an independent company package my products. I have a shipping container of hemp herd, which is the bag in front of you, and that's coming from Europe. It's going to be delivered tomorrow. And that's also in conjunction with Old Dominion Hemp that I'm working with on getting that imported. I will be selling the hemp herd as Old Dominion Equine Bedding and Good Ol' Hemp Specs Garden Landscaping Mulch. My vision is to have a processing line in operation when I have an established market for the herd and the fiber. Other products I'm developing with my hemp are Good Old Hemp Chapstick, Good Old Hemp Clothing, Good Old Hemp Tea, Good Old Hemp Soap, Good Old Hemp Honey. I'm also working with beer brewers to make hemp beer. Goldam Brewing is having good success with additional sales from brewing with my hemp seed. The hemp pilsner is their top seller in their tap room. I hope to be able to get my products as well into the state fair to showcase some of them. The need for new growers in Minnesota is to have hemp processors or access to hemp processors. With no processing infrastructure, farmers are limited to where they can sell their crop. This is because you can't cross the state lines with harvested viable seed. Another major issue of processors is you can't sell hemp byproducts from processing to feed to commercial livestock. It is very puzzling that humans can consume hemp, but it is illegal to sell to a commercial animal farmer as a highly nourishing feedstock. The Minnesota Department of Ag has done a great job with the pilot program. The MDA staff always answer my inquiries to the best of their ability or refer me to the people I should talk to. They have a lot to do with handling with the DEA and importing of the hemp seed. Without the Minnesota Department of Ag, we would not be growing industrial hemp as farmers. This funding is critical to the supply the MDA with the tools to help farmers to get accurate information to implement on our farms for growing hemp. The University of Minnesota is also a huge advocate for industrial hemp in Minnesota. They are doing variety trials for research and creating hemp varieties, which are critical for Minnesota farmers to get high-yielding varieties to plant. Planting seed will become more affordable in the future. Industrial hemp grows well in Minnesota and will bring jobs. The more value to our struggling farms in Minnesota. Please support us farmers by helping to create jobs in Minnesota. Please support the Minnesota Department of Ag, and please support our universities to help educate, and please support Hemp Bill HF2087. I will stand with any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Helberg. Do any members have questions for him at this time? Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Congratulations on seemingly successful growing of hemp. Had a question on the seed. You said it's going to get cheaper. Could you share with us some of the difficulties in getting seed last year, the cost, how many seeds per acre, and did you make any money?
Mr. Helberg.
Thank you. I lost money last year, but again, I'm in the research and development stage, so I'm in this for the long haul. In Canada right now, you're getting seed from $2 to $2.50 a pound, where we're paying around $5 a pound currently, and that's because it's all getting imported, so there's import taxes and fees along with that we have to pay for, and transportation, which drives up the cost of it. Per acre, you're looking about 25 to 30 pounds per acre for planting-wise, and I think that answers all your questions.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve mentioned you got yours seeded in July. Is that typically late, or is that okay to have it seeded?
It was very late. You want to be planting the end of May, beginning of June at the latest. You want to have the soil to be a warmer temperature so the hemp seed starts off really good and gets ahead of the weeds so you don't have to spray with chemicals.
Okay. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was at a conference a year or so ago, and I believe it was somebody from Oregon talking about the growing industrial hemp, and they had to have theirs tested to make sure the levels of THC were low enough. Is that the case here in Minnesota as well?
That was
Mr.
one.
Albert.
Thank you. That was another thing that the MDA does is they test it to make sure that our varieties are under the 3% level. But that's just one thing where it's we're growing certified seed, so there's a consistency in the seed crop already. So it's one of those things where it's just a little bit of overreach already when it's been proven. But it's mine was tested, and it was 0.0189% THC.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Very interesting. Some folks have said that this was last grown in the state back around World War II. And they still see volunteer hemp in the road ditches. Now, I realize it was just your first year last year, but do you plant it in rows or with a grain drill? How do you plant it? And do you anticipate volunteer hemp coming up this year? And how would you handle that?
Mr. Halbert?
Yes, it's 7-inch rows. Seems like it was the best for the hemp. Mine was considerably late, and so I more or less doubled up my seed just to make sure that I get some emergence and it was growing. But that's something for it's any kind of crop as well as farming. You have to tend to your land and you have to take care of it, and that's something where there's additional steps with tillage that you have to do in the into the spring, of course.
Chair Anderson?
And just what about the volunteer hemp coming up in following years?
Well, that's something where it's the first year that we growed, so it's the first season that we're going to be dealing with it. So it's just additional tillage that will have to be done, and that's something where you can plant hemp on hemp as well, and that's kind of the goal with it.
Chair Anderson? Okay. Representative Mahoney.
You mentioned an import tax. Does that have anything to do with the wall? New sort of Department of Ag, are they in the building here?
Yes.
Why did they come to the table? I got a question. I just want to know what the, I think this is a $200,000 request. What does that do? What do we get? How are you going to tell us what you got when it was all done?
And please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andrea Bobble. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I oversee the Plant Protection Division, which houses the Industrial Hemp Pilot Program. I'm so glad you asked that. We want to voice our enthusiastic support for House File 2087. We did request $200,000 per year in the governor's budget as well, so we appreciate this bill. So the money would go towards, currently we have an on-staff program coordinator. She's here today. Her name is Margaret. So the funding would go towards fulfilling that full-time employee. They're in charge of answering agronomic questions, processing questions. They work directly with the DEA. They coordinate all of the testing. As Mr. Halbert said, we do test all of those folks who are in our pilot program to make sure they're under the 0.3% threshold. If they aren't, we ask them to till it under, but luckily so far everyone has been well below that threshold. So the money would go towards the testing, again, the program coordinator who answers all of the questions, both, you know, agronomic and processing. And just to sort of talk about how big this program is getting, our first growing season last year, 2016, it was 7 pilot producers with 37 acres. We just closed our application process February 23rd and or February 24th, and we have 42 pilot producers this year planting over 2,100 acres. So we do have quite a bit of pilot producers calling and asking questions and trying to navigate the whole system because it's all pretty new to us as well. So that's what the money would go towards.
Representative Mahoney.
So would it be difficult to report back to the committee how many questions you answered, how many more acres you did, how many tests you did, to tell us what you did with the money? I mean, just I kind of am an accountability nut. And I thought I'd start small with a small program and start asking these questions of our agricultural industry.
Ms. Bobble.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. That is no problem. We part of what this pilot program is, it's a research program. So it's researching the growth, cultivation, and marketing. So we want to find out if this is a viable crop for Minnesota, and we're finding that it is. So we do require all of our pilot producers to report back their agronomic you know, what they planted, how it went, how they marketed, what happened, what their issues were. So we have all of that information easily put together, and we're happy to share that with the committee.
Representative Mahoney? Okay, are there any other member questions? Oh, I'm sorry about that. Representative Hansen, that's right. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Franson, or maybe Ms. Bravo. I know there were some changes with the Farm Bill that allowed the pilot projects, and but with the change in administration, so we have law and then we have enforcement, and it looks like there may be a different approach relating to enforcement of other types of cannabis. So what are you seeing? I mean, can this continue under the current federal oversight, or are we going to be moving forward and then all of a sudden have a no come from the federal government that we can't be doing this?
Ms. Bobble?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's a good question, and that's certainly something we're monitoring quite closely. As you said, we are legal under the DEA because we have the DEA Schedule 1 permit, so we are operating correctly under the law and the 2014 Farm Bill, which allows for these pilot programs to exist. So we are operating under the federal law in terms of the federal Farm Bill as well as the state law that was passed in 2015. We have been monitoring, obviously, with our new Attorney General and our new administration. We have not seen much in the way of industrial hemp specifically, and we are happy to see that it is thriving in a number of other states, including Kentucky. And there is, so Senator McConnell is a big supporter of industrial hemp, and Attorney General Sessions is from a state, Alabama, which has its own industrial hemp pilot program. So we feel optimistic that it will continue as is in terms of industrial hemp specifically.
Representative Hansen? Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Next to our next testifier, Mr. Strophus. Am I pronouncing that properly? Please come forward and give us your, state your name and who you represent, and please present your testimony. Thank you for being here today. As he's getting settled in, members, we do have a letter from Minnesota Farmers Union who won't be present here to testify today, but if you'd like to review that letter of their support.
I can. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is John Strophus. I'm here today representing Minnesota Hemp Farms, which is a new company that was started within the state. That's a separate entity from our existing farming operation in Hastings, Minnesota. We have a very small farm. We focus on commercial horse boarding as well as hay and forage production. And we were following the industrial hemp opportunity nationally. And with the passage of the 2014 Farm Bill, we're very supportive and eager to have the legislature pass the state legislation, which then created, thanks to Senator France's sponsorship, or Representative France's sponsorship, the local program within the Department of Agriculture. Hitting on some points that were raised in previous testimony, we had the largest planting last year, which was sort of a big fish in a small pond. We had 18 acres that we planted. We harvested approximately 29,000 pounds of grain on that acreage. And we had a significant amount of trouble last year with importing seed delays, partly due to the Department of Agriculture was very supportive and easy to work with throughout the process, but the lack of staffing and having other staff resources devote attention to the hemp program, which was hard to set up from the beginning, was problematic. And we're seeing already a benefit with having that additional staff this year, especially with the increase in folks that are growing. I also get a lot of calls and work very closely with the general bag on this particular issue and assist farmers with questions about growing practices, challenges that we had last year, and most of the number one question, of course, is the economics of it. So I'd just like to spend just a moment highlighting some of the products that we're producing with industrial hemp. The first is the hulled hemp seed, which is a food product, and that's the most popular hemp product right now for food purposes. Then we have an oil that we can press and use for food purposes as well as industrial manufacturing, lip balms, lotions, and the like. And then, as Josh mentioned in his prior testimony, the animal food market and feedstock for livestock, we can leverage the byproduct of the oil press process with the hemp cake or hemp meal as a viable livestock feed. But we have federal feed registration and federal ingredient classification that has to happen in order for that to be a viable opportunity within the state. So we're actually working with a FCO to become the requester for that food grade labeling. I'm open to any
Thank you, Mr. Strophus. Does anyone have any questions for him at this time? Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strophus, could you give us an idea of the investment needed for the machinery used to plant or cultivate, harvest your product?
Mr. Struffers.
Thank you. From a farming investment perspective for traditional growing, there really isn't much additional investment required if your intent is to plant and raise and sell. It's the processing downstream which requires the additional investment. Last year, with companies set up and other logistics issues, we're probably running a negative $50,000 in the first year, and we're looking at making approximately an $800,000 investment in processing within the state. But from a growing perspective, you can use traditional planting equipment, grain drills, or precision planting. 7.5 or even 6-inch row spacing is acceptable. It's about plant density. Water requirements are generally less. Fertility is about that of spring wheat. Harvesting is fairly straightforward with traditional combine equipment using a traditional bean head, or you can swath and take that approach as well. The key really is in managing the moisture level at harvest time, and then grain storage and dry down is really critical, especially in the food grade area.
Thank you. Representative Jurgens?
That's it. Thank you.
That's it. Are there any other questions for this testifier? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 2087? Okay, Representative Franson, I have one question, and then we'll see if there's any other questions.
Certainly.
I fully understand that hemp is not marijuana. We've had good discussions on that. And so I don't want to blend the two. However, as you know, I have very much personal concerns about recreational marijuana coming into Minnesota. So my question to you is, what safeguards and assurances do you have that this is not a road to recreational marijuana?
Okay. Industrial hemp is not marijuana at
correct.
All. It's from the same cannabis family, but it's more or less a cousin. And there has been zero issues with the acreage that has already been planted.
So perhaps I'll ask it again. What assurances or what safeguards are we going to be putting in place to make sure that this is not a road?
John will take over.
Okay. Or Ms. Bobble may answer also. I think she wants to give an answer. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I think the best answer to that is the agronomic answer. So one of the concerns that was raised with law enforcement in the past has been, how do we prevent diversion? How do we prevent someone from growing marijuana and hiding it in a industrial hemp field? And there's good evidence of what happens when you do this based on our other states, in particular Colorado, who has full recreational use, as you know. And the problem is that industrial hemp will cross-pollinate and reduce the THC level in marijuana plants. So any close proximity of those two plants essentially renders the marijuana ineffective. So the other comment I would make is, from a law enforcement perspective, working with the county sheriff, when we had to ask them as part of the application process last year about their opinion on this, and it was a very interesting answer. They opined that really they're not in the business of sanctioning one business over another, and it's either legal or it's not. And we had no complaints. We planted right on main thoroughfares, on highly traveled roads in our township and in our county, Washington County, and there were no complaints or issues with that.
Ms. Bobble, did you want to add anything?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to expand on Mr. Strophis, to be part of the pilot program, we do require a background check for anybody who wants to be a part of this. We also require that they do regular checks of their field to make sure that nothing has been tampered with. We do the testing to make sure that it is under the 0.3% threshold. So as we kind of say around here, you have to smoke a whole field and you just get a headache. So that psychoactive ingredient isn't there. And as Mr. Strophis said, it wouldn't make sense for you to plant any sort of marijuana with that higher THC level within your industrial hemp field, because it would ruin it because of the cross-pollination. So we do also require our pilots to alert their local law enforcement so that they know where those fields are so that they can do extra surveillance if they need to. So we've had a very positive experience with law enforcement and have had no issues thus far.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bobble. Are there any other questions? Representative Erdahl. Sorry, I saw him first. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just did a little bit of quick research here. There is a movie, Hemp for Victory, by the way. You could check this out. But apparently, during World War II, there was a shortage of the fibers needed for various things. And so the farmers of America were encouraged to grow hemp to take the place of the fibers that they couldn't access because of the war. And in Grove City, near where I live, there was a hemp plant. It's right on Highway 12. It's now a turkey farm, I think, but it was a hemp plant that we had right there in Grove City. So just a quick history lesson for you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Chair Anderson.
Thanks. One more question, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your indulgence. For the testifier, you mentioned making a substantial investment. And the number of acres in the state has grown from 37 to 2,100. What do you see as kind of a critical mass, the acres we'd have to get up to make a processing plant viable? And, you know, will we get there?
Thank you, Chairman. I don't know exactly how to answer your question. I can give you a perspective based on others. One of the challenges is that we have some issues with the federal legislation around this. So the states are acting under authority of 7606 and without issue generally. But they're working within the confines generally of their domain. And so each state, because of logistics purposes, is looking at standing up processing. So that is not necessarily efficient. So Minnesota and North Dakota will be probably the top producing hemp states in the country after time. Colorado and Kentucky have a good foothold and a head start on us, but we're catching up awfully quick. Last year there was 4,000 acres in Kentucky perspective. In Kentucky, there's a facility that started construction in the latter part of the fall, and their goal is to process 25 million pounds of hemp. That's probably every pound grown in the United States today, and it's still not even achieving that threshold. We still need local processing for logistics purposes, and a processor is not necessarily an end-all be-all because as Mr. Helberg testified around the fiber side, that's a particular market and an area of focus. The food grade has a different set of requirements. So it depends, I think, is the answer based on the focus. But it would need to be significantly more acres to make that profitable long term.
Okay. Members, just a reminder, we have other bills on the docket. I don't want to cut you short, Representative Anderson, by any means, but is there a quick follow-up?
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't dare.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. Seeing no more questions, thank you very much, Mr. Strophus. Representative Hansen, Representative Franson, do you have any final comments?
So Congressman Peterson is a big supporter of industrial hemp for the 7th District as well. And I have been in contact with Congressman Peterson about some other logistical issues regarding commerce and removing hemp from the Schedule 1 listing there. So that is something that he is also aware of. But while some may be hipsters, you guys, I believe it's hip to be a hempster. So let's support our hemp industry and fund the Minnesota Industrial Hemp Program. And I thank you for your time and indulgence in House File 2087.
House File 28, thank you, Representative Franson. House File 2087 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agricultural Finance Bill. Okay, members, we are going to jump around. Chair Hamilton is going to have his bill heard. He has a couple other bills over in tax Representative Thiessen, thank you for your patience on that, getting bumped back a little bit. We will move right into that. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1748. Representative Hamilton, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move House File 1748 to be held over for possible inclusion.
Representative Hamilton moves at 1748. Representative Hamilton, please present your bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Just real quick, obviously you have the bill before you. This would appropriate money from the general fund to the Commissioner of Agriculture for grants to ethnic minority chambers of commerce to help connect immigrants and new Americans, citizens, to farming opportunities within the state. We've had a lot of testimony, urban agriculture and others, and myself and I know many other people have been reaching out to different ethnic groups. And, you know, I've heard a number of comments about, Rod, we're farmers by nature. They want to have different opportunities to get involved in agriculture. And this is was brought to me from a group of a coalition of individuals that wanted to bring this idea forward. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier and stand for questions.
Okay, thank you. Please state your name and who you represent. I look at your name and I'm not going to get it right, so we'll have to hear from the first time here. Go ahead.
Eric R. Armuck, come to you with the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are here to support House File 1748 and thank Chair Hamilton for bringing it in front of you today. I'll get straight to the point. In 2014, the Center for Rural Policy and Development analyzed Minnesota's agriculture sector with respect to the growth of immigrant farmers. Their analysis was clear. Minnesota's growing immigrant population can help restore the decreasing population of today's farmers. House File 1748 addresses this exact point. It will connect ethnic chambers of commerce to immigrants and new American citizens to promote farming opportunities throughout the state. And we thank you for your support. And urge you to consider House File 1748. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Armakonicki. Members, are there any questions for the testifier? Is there anyone from the audience who would like to speak for or against this bill at this time? Okay, seeing no one, Representative Hamilton, do you have any final comments?
Well, as the testifier stated, we do have the director for the Center for Rural Policy and Development in the stands. I thank you for your work also. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd simply ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. He renews his motion. House File 1748 is laid over for possible inclusion to the Omnibus Agricultural Finance Bill. Thank you, Chair.
Yep.
Okay, we are going to move back now. The next bill on the agenda is House File 2220, Representative Thiessen. Representative Eklund, would you like to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 2220 be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. He moves that the House File 2220 be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance. Representative Thiessen, please present your bill.
Thank you,
for coming to the committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm going to let the testifiers do most of it. I just do want to say two quick things. One, I hope that all of you actually look at the work that this center does, because they do some pretty amazing reports and really, really good information that would be valuable for all of us in the legislature. So I would just encourage people, if you haven't taken the time to do that, please do that. And the second thing is just to explain, this has been funded in the past out of deed. In recent years, it's kind of been split between the ag budget and deed, and so that's why the referral to jobs. I hope that you strongly consider it, because I think ag seems to understand this a little bit better than jobs right now. So please keep that in mind. But I'll let Mr. Finstad, my classmate in the legislature, actually,
Wonderful. Mr. Finstead, please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brad Finstead with the Center for Rural Policy and Development, and I'm here to announce that I'm a recovering politician. So I served with Paul. We were elected the same year in 2002, and I represented Brown County, Watonwan, and Redwood County for 3 terms. So a few of you around the table I had the pleasure of serving at, and I actually had the pleasure and honor to serve on this committee. So being in your shoes before, I just want to thank you all for the work that you do and the sacrifices that you make. I know this time of year, I'm sure your thoughts are on your families and back home and when you're going to see them again. So just thank you for your service. I'd also like to thank Representative Thiessen for carrying this bill for us. The Center is a unique organization. We are the only statewide private nonprofit 501c3 that takes a nonpartisan, unbiased look at rural issues. So back in 1997, the Center was created through a bipartisan coalition of legislators in the state here, but then also with the major funding foundations of the state, organizations like Blandon, Bremer, McKnight Foundation, got together and they said, you know, we need to start looking at policy from the lens of rural Minnesota to make sure that as in-depth and, tough legislative decisions need to happen, that someone was taking a look at it from a rural angle. So the state agreed to with the foundations to fund us our first years, and we'll go over that in a little bit. But before I get into that, just tell you a little bit more about who we are and what we do. And I can't go any further because I have a boss at the table here. So our board is unique. We are we have 14 board members that are appointed by the governor, and then also a member appointed by the Speaker of the House, and a member on our board appointed by the Senate Majority Leader. So Representative Schumacher is on our board, so be kind to me after this. But we really enjoy the legislative representative on our board because it gives us a real pulse of the language you're all speaking, the mode of communication that works best for you, and then we really try to tailor our research to fit that mold. So we've been around since 1997. We've really focused in on some of the core issues that kind of move rural Minnesota from agriculture, mining, to forestry, to rural development issues like broadband, property taxes, education funding. Those are the type of issues that we've taken on. Over the last 3 or 4 years, we've adjusted our delivery model a little bit to try to be more with the times. You know, how do you do in-depth research and communicate it in 140 characters? And so we've really adopted and adapted to this infographic style of research, so we're able to be very visual, put the information that we do out in front of you. And as a quick example, and it should be in your packets, we did a piece on child care. So you'll see this. That's one of our more recent pieces. But again, you know, just trying to be very visual, trying to create a real reality of the issues at hand, and then hopefully feed and offer you some in-depth discussion material or research to create some more context as you take on these tough issues. The funding that we're asking for, so it's been a roller coaster over the time, as you know, a lot of the state budget has with the deficits in the early 2000s. The original plan with the state was to do a $500,000 biennium partnership with the foundations and then a one-time $2 million fund to fund an endowment. That was put into place, and then the plan was for the state to do $250,000 a year and then take the interest off that endowment fund to get us to about a $500,000 a year state contribution to our budget. Our budget right now to date is right around $600,000 a year. So back in the early 2000s, the $2 million endowment fund was unallotted, and so we lost out on all that opportunity for interest. And then you'll see in the handout that our funding has been a roller coaster since. So I brought with me today one of our board members and our chair of our finance committee, and he can talk a little bit about how we've tightened our belt and gotten through some of these tough times. What we're asking for here is a diversity in funding, as Representative Thiessen said, you know, through the Department of Ag and through DEED, and then also asking for an increase. So we appreciate your consideration of this, and Mr. Chair, if it works.
Thank you, Mr. Finstead. Mr. Ladd, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Dave Ladd. I currently serve on the Board of Directors for the Center for Rural Policy and Development and am the current Finance Committee Chairman for the Center. And I think, you know, I'd like to start right away by reiterating that I'd like to thank the support on behalf of my fellow board members and the foundations, Blandon, Bremer, McKnight, who've had good partnerships with over the years. And you've heard a lot of the what and the background, but I'll give you a little bit of the why. Even when we have you seen the funding paradigm and shifts over the years, the core of the mission of this center has never changed with my board members. So when we're making some very difficult decisions as a board and as a finance committee on how to move forward with some of these uncertainties in the funding stream, the core was always research, nonpartisan, usable research for stakeholders, including obviously policymakers. And you heard the previous testifier mention that they use some of the center's research in what they're looking at, so stakeholders as well. But that's always been the core. And for well over a decade, we've been pretty parsimonious in how we allocate our resources and deploy our assets. And when you look at those numbers, you look at the funding streams, research has always been the core. So the why here would be we can do, but we know we can do more. This would provide some opportunities for more enhanced research, potential research director to come on board full-time. We've operated for well over a decade with two full-time staff members. And so the opportunity, we believe, is here, and we appreciate the opportunity to bring this before the committee for consideration. I think we stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ladd. Do any members have questions at this time? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for presenting the bill. This is, in my mind, a very important organization, and I recognize them. Thank you for your comments about how you present the research that you do, and I think it's very valuable. I do read the reports. They're very readable, and it looks like you're targeting to a broad audience. I wouldn't mind. I'd like a comment on that. But more importantly, I'm curious about how you select the research projects that you engage in, because your timeliness is uncanny, it feels to me. And I'm just curious how you go about that.
Mr. Fenstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the great question. So the model that we transitioned to about 4.5 years ago to decide our research agenda for the year is very grassroots. We call it our thought leaders process. So each year we're soliciting the advice of over 1,800 Minnesotans from all walks of life, all over rural Minnesota. You as legislators, I know we include in it, but we really ask a couple key questions of what keeps you up at night when you think about rural Minnesota. What are the issues that you're dealing with right now in your backyard? And obviously the challenge as a research organization is to find that out and then turn around research quick that can be valuable. So we're also trying to keep a pulse on what you're all talking about, where we see the legislature and state and federal government moving. You know, we do a lot of economic and demographic data analysis to see where trends are moving to, and that really helps us guide that process. But the research ideas are very grassroots, very from the ground up, from, you know, Minnesotans from all walks of life. And then in regards to the, you know, how are we getting our news out, how are we getting our research out, we're using all modes possible. So we've transitioned more to doing things like trying to position ourselves in things like Morning Take. It's a publication of kind of a news source every morning, but working with local media, metro media, and then obviously just, you know, whenever we get a chance to talk to folks like you to present our information. We do a lot of presentations across the state. Like Dave said, it's two full-time staff we have. But we also, and I'm thinking this looking at you, we also have a great group of grad assistants that we work with colleges and universities. So Gustavus, the Minsky system, and the U of M have been good to us, providing grad assistants, grad students that have really helped us with the kind of the guts of our research to put that data together that we can then present.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that explanation. I just a quick comment. It is very impressive in my mind the level of productivity or production from this group, given the few staff, and my compliments.
Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to speak in favor of the bill and thank Representative Thiessen for bringing it forward. This is an organization that I've been able to serve on for the last couple of years. It's been quite a privilege to do so. It's a very professional organization. And to the point about the research that gets done there, what I've always found with the group is that their passion, their drive for what they want to be able to present in research isn't so much to pile on to research that's already been out there, not just the issues that are out there, but things that are really going to affect the lives of people in greater Minnesota. And so they take a lot of time to make those types of evaluations, and I hope to see this funded.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any other questions from the members? Seeing, go ahead, Representative Eckman.
I'm just getting ready to do my thing.
Okay. So that would is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 2220? Seeing none, Representative Thiessen, do you have any closing comments?
No, I think you've got a great feel for the organization. I'm sure most of you know about it, but I think you could hear from some of the comments of the excitement and energy that is around this organization, and you know, it's. Times are changing very quickly all across the state, and I really think that this kind of research and then being able to communicate it and keep a sense of where things are is more important than ever. So I hope that you'll give really full consideration to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. So Representative Eklund.
Just trying to move things along, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 2220 be referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability, Policy, and Finance.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. It should be noted that the language in this bill pertaining to this committee's jurisdiction will be considered for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agricultural Finance Bill. All those in favor of Representative Eklund's motion, say aye.
Aye.
Oh. Chair Anderson.
Well, just a quick question here. Part of the funding is coming from the Department of Ag. What about the other money from DEED? Would that be also coming from this bill out of this committee?
Chair Anderson, no, that's why the bill is going on to the Jobs Committee, where their portion will be considered, and then ours will be held over for potential inclusion. Okay. Sorry about that. We're going to do this one more time, folks. Representative Eklund does renew his motion for House File 2220 to be re-referred to the Jobs Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion passes.
Thank you,
Representative Thiessen. Okay, the next bill on the agenda is Representative Johnson C's bill, House File 1192. Representative Johnson. Would you like to move your bill?
Yeah, I move that House File 1192 be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance.
Thank you. Representative Johnson moves that House File 1192 be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance. Representative Johnson, please present your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is about safety on the farm. And it's been working its way through the legislative process, and I deeply appreciate this committee hearing it. Minnesota's had kind of a checkered past or an up-and-down past on how we address safety on the farm, and this is an attempt to kind of move us forward and building on work that we asked the Department of Agriculture to do last year. They have formulated a farm safety task force or work group and came up with this document. And this document did a number of things. One, it gave us the history of how we've addressed farm safety in Minnesota. It helped us understand better the impact and the breadth of the problem of safety on the farm. This is working safety. And it also gave a set of recommendations that to the legislature to move forward with it. This bill represents several of those recommendations, which I think are an important next step in addressing farm safety on the farm. Real quickly, I don't think I have to go into it in depth, but 30% of workplace fatalities in 2014 were on the farm, yet only 2% of our workers work on the farm. And so we've got a farm safety, workplace safety issue, and it's time to address it now. What this bill would do in terms of the finance end is would do several things. First of all, for free, it establishes the Farm Safety Working Group, and I think that's really important. We need that established over time. Secondly, it would provide some seed money from the general fund to the Commissioner of Agriculture to kind of work with farm safety issues with associated organizations and also to work with youth groups. And because we know the young are involved with this, we want our young people safe on the farm. It would also address the need to get back to the good old days when Extension at the University of Minnesota had someone who was on staff focused on safety on the farm. And all of these were recommendations that came out of the group. And so I'd like to ask several people to testify on the benefits of the bill. I'll start with Andrea Barbel with the Department of Agriculture.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. And Ms. Bobble, please restate your name and who you represent for the record. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Andrea Bobble, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I also oversee the Farm Safety Program at the department, and we're just here to voice our support for House File 1192. As Representative Johnson had mentioned, we convened a Farm Safety Working Group last year along with the Minnesota Safety Council, and there was a clear need for a discussion about kind of taking stock of everything that's going on with farm safety in our state and what we can do to address these issues. And we came up with a lot of wonderful recommendations, which this bill directly addresses. We think, you know, establishing the Farm Safety Working Group officially is a really good place to start. We've got a number of folks here who will testify about just having that open dialogue, and that conversation is essentially important. And then also just allowing for the department to be able to oversee a number of these activities. I think it makes sense for the agency to have a presence in this realm because a lot of folks look to us for help and just see us as a resource, so we want to make sure that we have the resources to be able to be that resource for people. So we really appreciate that, as well as I think the number one thing that came out of that Farm Safety Working Group was that we need to have that extension person. They were sort of in the past really looked upon as the leader in the state and the major resource for folks to go to when it came to farm safety, and so we at the agency would really like to see that happen. So we are in have major support for this, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Fable. We do have a question. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Ms. Fable. Got a question for you. How have you seen has there been an increase in farm accidents recently?
Ms. Fable?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel. So there was a Star Tribune a series of articles that came out a few years ago where it said that it's, I think we are kind of slowly, it kind of goes in, it ebbs and flows, and I think at this point we have a slight increase, but it certainly isn't decreasing. So it's something that we want to make sure we're taking a look at. The other thing being that our the average age of our farmers here in the state is raising, and it's at 55, so it's just only going to get to become a bigger problem as folks aren't able to perform some of the tasks on the farm.
Representative Keel?
My other comment would be is I recall a program, farm safety program, that was promoted by Farm Bureau actually with the surgeon years ago. That's how I scared my son into keeping his hands out of the auger. he's now running the farm. But my question is I don't even know if that is still existing or if that is welded into the extension program.
Ms. Bobble?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keel, I think you'll be hearing from Farm Bureau here shortly, but they certainly are a huge partner in this. They are doing a lot of great things with youth in particular, so they still have a number of programs that they run at this point. I don't know if that one specifically, but you'll be hearing from Farm Bureau shortly.
Okay.
Representative Keel.
I probably should wait to listen, but it was an excellent program because it really helped us to actually learn how to transport when there was injuries. And just FYI, sometimes farm accidents, I mean, this might be a great program, but sometimes farm accidents are just that. They are a reality of exhausted, hardworking people that make bad choices at a time when they shouldn't have. It seems like every so often we have somebody do something and everyone looks at each other and says, oops, should have known better. I have a really good friend that he's deceased now because he had health problems, but he was much older and should have known better and stuck his arm in something that he shouldn't have. He was really lucky he didn't lose his arm. I'm a little concerned about how far we're going in regulating, because I know there's lots we already do on the farm. But I'm anxious to hear what everybody else would say.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Ms. Bobble? If not, we're going to move on. Representative Johnson?
Just real quickly in response, I don't have the data as far as trends, but this raw number is pretty startling. Between 2011 and 2014, there were 78 deaths on the farm related to working on the farm. And it also, as the changing nature of the farm, where I think that I don't have the data on this either, but there's more people working on the farm, people from different cultures. There's increased need for this. And then finally, as far as the Farm Bureau program, part of this bill does allow for some seed money for organizations like the Farm Bureau who are involved with farm safety to help them extend their efforts. And so I hope that addresses your questions.
Ms. Bobble?
Mr. Chair and Representative Keel, just to kind of clarify, I think one of the things that we talked about in the Farm Safety Working Group is there wasn't really a desire to do any sort of official regulation on the farm. I think it's really just trying to reach those and get sort of the culture change in terms of making some of those choices when you're exhausted and maybe cutting corners here and there. So I think that's one thing that we definitely came to consensus on, was there wasn't any desire to have any sort of requirement or regulation on the farm when it comes to farm safety.
Okay. Representative Johnson, do you have a comment? Or
real quickly, that's certainly my intention as the author of the bill, too. This is not about regulation.
Okay. To your next testifier. Thank you, Ms. Bobble. Next testifier.
Next, I'd like to ask Mr. Mike Schmidt from the University of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Schmidt. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Michael Schmidt, Associate Dean of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences and the University of Minnesota Extension. And I'm here today to lend full support for this farm safety bill. Kudos to Representative Johnson for leading this effort. Safety on the farm is an extremely important issue, as well as not just on the farm, but in the entire agricultural food chain. And this bill is getting addressing that safety concern. I want to also reference this report that was put together. I think that it really addresses some of the issues, and the recommendations in it are something that we really need to look at, getting back to, you know, the importance of farm safety. You know, there's multiple ways to address farm safety, you know, on the farm. You know, and we can talk about incentivizing, you know, different pieces of equipment or different options, and we can talk about policy in that, but we believe at the University of Minnesota Extension that education is the key way to address farm safety. Education will last for generations, we believe. It's not just going to run out when a cost share program runs out. Education, I think, can address a lot of the issues that are going on, you know, in the farm today. So we're very pleased to read in this bill the support of a renewal of the Extension Farm Safety Program. Unfortunately, that program has kind of eroded with time. Some untimely departures in our staff on campus, as well as some untimely departures of our program out in the counties. We need that, you know, that emphasis on farm safety and that renewal of this program. So the University of Minnesota wants to be part of this bill. We truly believe in concept what is written here is something that needs to be done. We're supportive of that. The roles described in this bill with the Farm Safety Working Group, along with the effort that the Department of Agriculture would be playing and the University of Minnesota Education Program, we think it would be synergistic to reaching the goals outlined by Representative Johnson. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Do any members have questions for him at this time? Chair Anderson.
It'll be quick, Mr. Chair. For the testifier, this is a good program. I'm a little bit concerned about duplication between the extension and the Department of Ag. Especially, I look at the page 2, line 30, developing programs, farm safety and youth education. That, to me, sounds like 4-H and extension, a perfect place for you folks to work with youth education. Could you comment on that? Would that be better addressed from your side in extension?
Mr. Schmidt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. Excellent question, and this is one of those where I think where we, extension in the department, we work together, and we believe that our role in these in implementing program is creating curriculum and creating that content where a farm safety program can then be rolled out, whether it be with the Department of Ag or with our county extension programs. But the role that we see extension playing here is creating, you know, the curriculum that then we roll out in various avenues and with various other partners, et cetera. So our role, we look at it right now as conceptually being in that, the applied research and creating the curriculum that the actual programs, fall under.
Chair Anderson?
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Representative Johnson, do you have another testifier?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And two testifiers, Mr. Tom Peterson and Mr. Cole Ruprecht with the Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau, respectively.
Gentlemen, you can choose who goes first, but state your name and who you represent, and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we do appreciate and support this bill. Really, a lot of this got started about a year and a half ago, maybe, or maybe 2 years ago now, when the Star Tribune did quite a big story. If you haven't read it, you can go back and look at it on farm safety, and they took a long time to put this story together, and it highlighted a lot of the statistics and everything that Representative Johnson's brought up. Paul Austin with the Minnesota Safety Council, he couldn't be here today, but he's been working and helping lead us, together as a group and helping this effort. And I was able to attend several of these meetings of the ad hoc group, and frankly, we were surprised by the level of interest and support in a lot of the farm safety within our own organization. The tractor rollover bill, definitely saw a lot of interest and continued interest in people signing up for that. As well as the National Farmers Union, we did a series of videos this year, and we were surprised by the amount of people looking at those and the interest in that. So it was helpful as a group to get together to see what everybody was doing and to come up with different ideas. The one thing that kind of struck me was the need for grants and a lot of different groups doing different things. So we mentioned farm groups with 4-H, FFA, different chapters. This last weekend, I was able to attend the AgriAbility annual conference. If any of you aren't familiar with that, it's part of Equipa Life, but it's farmers who have suffered some kind of disability on the farm in an accident. It's hard, to go and sit with some of these folks, but it's also inspiring because they still want to farm. So they've, had an accident, and, I think a lot of things are changing, too, you talk about on the farm. One thing I noticed is the amount of people that have been hurt by these large square bales, we've changed from the big round bales to the large square bales, and handling those, a lot of people have become paralyzed having those fall on them, which is really an interesting or different, we talk about agriculture changing, but it's just different thoughts or different ideas that things that we haven't talked about. So I think that's a really important piece, and appreciate Representative Johnson for carrying it. Thank you.
State your name for the record. Who you represent?
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Cole Ruprecht with Minnesota Farm Bureau, and we too support this bill. Farm safety is a very high priority for Minnesota Farm Bureau, and we want to thank Representative Johnson as well as the rest who have been involved with this bill. One of the things I think that is unique neat about the bill is the bringing together of the group and the sharing of resources. A lot of our different organizations have a lot of different resources, and by codifying this working group, the ability to share those resources and have some uniformity across the state. And to answer Representative Keel's question, Minnesota Farm Bureau still does several farm safety days across the state. They're conducted by our county farm bureaus, and we also have two safety trailers that are available across the state as well to help with those.
Thank you, members. Excuse me, are there any questions for either of these testifiers? Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to reiterate the education and not negating the education. I think it's very important that young people understand what is happening on the farm. There's a lot of dangers there, but there's a lot of protections if you handle things right. But having grown up, I saw a few neighbor kid that was told not to touch anything and was visiting and did anyway. And he still is with, lost a finger, and I was out campaigning and he reminded me that I was there. Yes, that's right. But I do remember you were told not to. So, and my point of the education is great, but sometimes on the farm, I have four brothers. There's only one of them that has had multiple accidents, and most of the problem is he's too quick. He's just, he's still farming, though, and has all his fingers and toes and arms, but he's had his arm in an auger, and he's done some interesting things, but he's fine. But even when he was a child, he fell out of a hayloft and actually jumped out of it. So, not head first, by the way. I do think the education is very important for our students, but I like the local, I know our fire department does a annual spring where they bring a lot of students out. They do it for all the students in the school district, and they talk about all the different safety things that they should be doing, being able to put out fires and all of those things. And then I would also remind our farmers that when you're hiring somebody, you do need to educate them and understand, help them to understand how to handle tractors, equipment. It's really important. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other members? Does anyone wish to testify for or against House File 1192 in the audience? Okay, seeing no one, our members, any other Representative Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to ask you, when you design the group that does the work, do you have women farmers represented on here? The reason I'm asking is I was recently at a training for women and tractors, and there was a lot of caution that was expressed by some of the people who were attending that, and I'm just wondering if you're making sure that we have some of our farm women who do more and more farming represented.
Representative Johnson.
Could they be added?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I honestly don't know. Perhaps Ms. Vavo could explain that. But the comment is very apt in that about women on being involved with a task force. And because it makes me think back just that Mankato puts out a magazine, Women in Mankato, or Women in the Region, or whatever. And about 2 or 3 months ago, they highlighted women in agriculture, and the number of women doing important things in agriculture in South Central Minnesota is notable. But I don't know as far as the conversation goes.
Mr. Chairman, it turned out to me that there's a number of citizen members, and maybe we could just make sure that one of those folks could represent our, let's line 2.6, could include or be sure to represent women farmers. That might be one way to ensure that.
Oh, Ms. Bobble, coming down there.
Hello, Mr. Chair, Representative Clark. So in terms of how the Farm Safety Working Group was already comprised, it was actually mostly women from the organizations that were part of that group. And so through this legislation, it will be through the open appointments process. So we'll be working with the commissioner will be appointing those folks for the open appointments, the citizen members. So we'll be certain to have that voice continue on that working group.
I think, again, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark.
Of the ones who are actually doing farming. Thank you.
Yes.
Are there any other questions from the committee members? Seeing none, Representative Johnson, any final comments?
Well, thank you. And again, this is an issue that just I think is central to what this committee seeks to accomplish. I think it's central to what we want to happen on the farm. And as Representative Peel indicated, there's a real human aspect to this. A young man that I know very well at home, his father lost a best friend on the farm this winter. And it was interesting. I was at a township meeting just the other day, and township officers, and happened to sit next to a township officer who shared the story that he lost his son on the farm. And so there's this human aspect. I don't like to ever forget that. And so I think it really compels that we move forward. Before I make my motion, I just want to indicate that a little bit of concern or question about the fact that this bill will be going to the Higher Ed Committee. I want to remind this committee that in the last couple of years, we provided substantial funding to the Department of Agriculture through this committee for a lot of funding that ended up going to the University of Minnesota. So there is a, I'm thinking, the AGREET program. Wow. And I'm thinking that, you know, I look at the University of Minnesota, 50,000 students, a lot going on, and farm safety could possibly get lost in the shuffle in there. Whereas in this committee, where we're focused on agriculture, we're focused on the needs of family farmers, that perhaps this is where the funding needs to come from. And I respect the view of the chair that this should go to the Higher Ed Committee. I understand that. But I hope this committee also considers that this may be the place where all the funding, including the extension position, should come through this committee.
Representative Johnson.
And with that, I renew my motion that House File 1192 be referred to the Committee on Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance.
That's a mouthful. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Renews his motions that House File 1192 be referred to the Committee on Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance. And Representative Johnson, the language in this bill pertaining to this committee's jurisdiction will be considered for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Agricultural Finance Bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Against, nay. Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Johnson. We do have one more bill on the agenda, House File 170, Representative Hansen. And give me a script on this, so we're just going to freelance this one. I think we can handle it. Okay, there we go. Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that the maybe appropriate motion is that the portions of jurisdiction in this committee would be laid over for possible inclusion. That would be Section C, which is the finance for ag. And I don't know if you want to do that with the rest of it or if I should take a chance and try to get it passed to the next committee.
Representative Hansen, at this time we're going to lay the whole thing over.
Okay.
So two-year bill.
I would take that. So.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have something to hand out. I think, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, they may remember last year, House File, there was a similar bill that we passed out, and as with science, there's more data that comes out, and so I'm passing out one of about a dozen studies that have been published recently on the impacts on mammals from neonicotinoids. Last year, the bill that I proposed was looking at collecting hair samples by hunters. We've also had changes in what's happening with the deer population in Minnesota. We currently have a chronic wasting disease outbreak where deer samples are being collected, and the science shows that actually analyzing hair is probably not the best way of looking for certain compounds, but looking at tissue would be. So as we're collecting brain tissue of deer for chronic wasting disease, you've already got the sample. You could run the analysis for neonicotinoids. Why would you run the analysis for neonicotinoids? I'm handing out the sheet on the science of the impact of neonicotinoids on mammals. What you have in front of you is on rabbits. There are other studies on rats, and I'm also going to pass out an abstract on material on a study that is being done currently in South Dakota on deer. Good science
requires repetition and replication and analysis. I think that with the South Dakota study, which is about to be published, and what I'm panning out is the abstract. I have not seen the research, but the research I handed out earlier on rabbits, I think, is important, looking at mammalian impacts of some of the compounds that we use, and neonicotinoids being a relatively recent addition to the suite of chemistry that is used in agriculture. With that recent addition, it is used a lot. We have talked in this committee and others on pollinators over the last several years. I think it would be prudent as Minnesotans to look at mammals. I actually think it would be prudent to look at fish and fowl studies as well. But I thought with the CWD outbreak, the ease of collecting the samples and running another analysis would be cheaper. Frankly, we were already collecting the samples. We could run the analysis. And that would be a function that the Department of Agriculture and the laboratory could do. So that is the reason for my bill. I think there are people who want to test.
Representative Hanson, I do have Jim Leach in the DNR. Is Jim here? There we go. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Leach. Please state your name and who you represent for the record. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you. My name is Jim Leach. I'm the Division Director for Fish and Wildlife with Minnesota DNR. Asked just to talk about a few of the concerns that we have with this piece of legislation. It's designed as a one-year study. We think very much that this would have to be a 3 to 5 year study, really to document and get salient information from a research project. Currently, the Game and Fish Fund is in decline, and this would not be one of our high-priority projects for Game and Fish dollars. As many of you may know, we have a fee increase proposed for the Game and Fish Fund because it is in such stark decline right now. Moreover, you know, pesticides have been studied in vertebrates. We think there's a need for this type of research. It's just that right now our priorities do not align with doing this. With the CWD that Representative Hanson has mentioned down in the southeast, our staff are collecting significant samples from harvested deer, from hunters and landowners. It would require significantly more effort to gain the tissue samples than what we're currently doing. So it would, again, be a significant increase for our staff to participate. Currently, we do not have a toxicologist on staff with Minnesota DNR, so a lot of the work would have to be outsourced to the University of Minnesota primarily. Neonics in mammals is something of significant concern to us, but at the time, as I've mentioned, we're looking more at the invertebrate connection of neonics and in aquatic organisms. So our priorities right now and use of Game and Fish dollars would not align with making this a priority project for DNR.
Are there any member questions for Mr. Leach? Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What would it take to make it a priority? Would you need some funding? Or would we be,
Mr.
Or
Leach?
Would you, Mr. Chairman, or would you suggest that we work with you to get funding to the university as you...
Mr. Chair, members, use of game and fish dollars for this project is really a big concern of ours right now. As I mentioned, the Game and Fish Fund is going down. If it was funded off of general fund or other funding sources, that would be a possibility. Our big concern really is the source of the funding. I think that in and of itself would increase our interest in the proposal.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you see the document on the Journal of Entomology and Zoology Studies? Have you had a chance to look at that?
The one that was handed out?
Yeah, the Journal of Entomology and Zoology Studies, histopathological changes in the gonads of male rabbits, and then it goes on to talk about potential impacts on...
Mr. Chairman, I read it this morning while I was waiting in the audience, so I did read it, yes.
Okay.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does it concern you?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, there is a concern. It's just a matter of, you know, with our deer population right now, reproductive success of our deer is not of a major concern. Other aspects of the deer herd are taking the priority of our resources right now, and splitting that on this is going to take a significant effort on refocusing our resources onto other issues. CWD right now is really the disease that we are really focused on, and to be honest, we have limited resources to address these issues.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe this is a question for the author. I'm guessing that you're raising this issue is not just to look at the reproductive capacity of the deer, right, but we're talking about possible human interactions as well. Would you say a little bit more about that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clark. I think when we start looking at mammalian impacts, humans are mammals, and we need to I understand Mr. Leach's concern, and that was why, you know, it has it going to the Department of Natural Resources, because we hear about the impacts on the budget in the Natural Resources Committee. I do want to keep Mr. Leach happy. He is a voter in my district, and so I want to make sure that he's smiling. But I understand that we often, as legislators, and regardless of the committees we're in, deal with the immediate crises. We deal with CWD, or we deal with bird flu. We deal with the fire that's in front of us right now. I think it would be wise for us to at least look at the larger question here. We have a new chemistry that is being used in a lot, widely. We have data that's coming in on other mammals. We have collection of samples going on. And perhaps it is the University of Minnesota. Perhaps it would be agreed. Perhaps it would be other research, but all of that also requires funding. So I had split the funding this year compared to last year by having the Department of Ag do the analysis and then having the Commissioner of Natural Resources. I'm fully aware of the shortfalls impending on the Game and Fish Fund. But I would think it would be good, and I would hope if this is held over, that we look at some way of providing some research looking at these long-term things, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years, because I don't think the issue is going to go away.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I just bring this up partly as a person who's concerned about some of the issues that we know that have been emerging in male reproduction in our human beings. both reproduction and reproductive organ issues with cancer and other things. So I read that carefully. I think that's the kind of thing, if we have a chance to participate to some degree with whichever funds are available, it would be helpful. These can be very serious and tragic situations, you know, for families, this kind of exposure. I'm looking beyond the deer. I mean, the deer are important too, but it sounds like that reproductive issues for deer is not a concern. So it's more the issues in humans that I'm interested in, this just me having the opportunity to continue to look at. This has come up around some other species as well, but I'm glad you brought it before us, and if we can do anything, I would hope we might try. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Hansen, do you have any other testifiers?
I think there may be one more.
Maybe one more? Okay. Members, we do have about 6 minutes left in this. We are going to finish on time so people can get to their other appointments. Sir, please state your name and who you represent for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Collin, and today I'm representing the Pesticide Action Network. And quickly, we'd just like to voice our support for House File 170. And it was mentioned the widespread use of the neonic class of pesticides, and just to put on the record that it is true that you have about 8 million acres of corn, and we assume that's another bill on collecting information on how much of that is neonic treated, but we assume that just about all of it is, and in the case of soybeans, we have nearly 8 million acres, and maybe half of it is neonic treated, and here again, we're not sure. But that in combination with that about 94% of that neonic treatment from the corn ends up in the soil. So if you got corn on corn or corn and soybeans in rotation over time, and it's fairly persistent, you do end up with a fair amount of neonics in the corn. So I think I've had the opportunity to talk to just about all of you about the use of neonics in the state of Minnesota and agriculture. And by no way do I want to vilify farmers at all. That's the last thing I want to do. But looking for a solution to help, you know, primarily our concern is the impact on pollinators. But there seems to be a widespread interest amongst legislators to have a discussion about neonic use in the state of Minnesota, and collecting information, I think, is an important part of that. This would be another vehicle for doing that, to see how widespread it is. And then also, too, now what's coming to light, and I had a chance to read about it, too, the impact on mammals, because it's safer to use for humans to use than other products that were used in the past. Neonics is assumed to be, you know, safe for mammals, but if you have this much persistent use, this widespread, and then the studies that seem to be coming out now, we certainly support collecting more information, and we support House File 170.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Okay, seeing no one else, are there any questions? Representative Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, neonics have been around for, I think, since back in the 90s, and we still have a pretty good deer population. And looking at the quick study here on the, I think it was rabbits in the first one you sent out, and a lot of these lab studies, and I just saw early on there, they feed the chemical for 10 to 20 consecutive days, which probably isn't what happens in the field with animals in the wild. They wouldn't consume anything consecutively for 10 to 20 days. And, you know, we got a bill passed to ban the chemical on the DNR land, and I'm just not so sure that we're not looking for a problem here with in the deer population, and again, raising the specter of bad things with this group of chemicals, and I just think we should go slow on this.
Thank you, Chair. Are there any other comments or questions from the committee? Representative Hansen, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson, that's why you'd be looking in the field with this. This is to actually take field samples and look at the impacts that may be occurring. So you take it out of the lab and you look at real-world examples, and I think that's important. As we start to get more and more laboratory studies, getting actual data from the field is important, because if it is having an impact, and maybe that isn't on a reduction of fawns, but maybe it is on inability to carry two fawns to term, or maybe you lose one every other year or something like that. We don't know. I'm looking forward to the data that comes from the study from South Dakota. I think, again, that replication of science is important to validate it, and I'm hopeful if when this is laid over that we find some way of funding actual field research that can give us data that would be helpful. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, and he renews his motion that House File 170 be laid over for possible inclusion. It is laid over in the Omnibus Agricultural Finance Bill. Members, our next meeting is Thursday, March 16th. This meeting is adjourned.